Welcome to Baseball America's College Podcast. Baseball America, bringing you baseball news you can't get anywhere else for more than 35 years. Now it's time to talk college baseball.
I'm Teddy Cahill. We've got John Manuel, Jim Schonard here to talk about the latest edition of the Baseball America Top 25, powered by Louisville Slugger, Power in Numbers. So this week, the poll looks reasonably similar. The first eight teams stay the same. Only one new team coming in. Texas A&M enters. Wright State leaves after losing a series at South Carolina. Shout out to the Raiders, though. Finishing an incredible start to the season. Incredibly difficult start to the season at Clemson, at South Carolina. They went 3-3.
Guys, how many teams go on the road to Clemson and South Carolina and go 3-3, period? Like, would North Carolina or Georgia or LSU go on the road there and go 3-3. I mean, I just that's hard to do for anybody.
It's a very admirable 3-3, I think.
I'm with you. That's why we ranked them last week on the 2-1. But also, kudos to South Carolina. It's kind of a nice sign for South Carolina to, you know, and for Clemson to schedule Wright State. Wright State's not a team. We saw them last year here at NC State. Jim, I think you and I both said this on a podcast last year. Like, that's not a... You don't, like, draw fans for a weekend series in February because, oh, Wright State's coming to town. But and it doesn't even really help your RPI, but it does help your team because Wright State's always competitive and a constant factor in their league, usually winning their league. I mean, I think all these schools deserve credit for scheduling them.
And we talked a little bit last week, and I think it was on either the Facebook Live or the podcast, that it would have been easier for South Carolina to look past them to their credit so they didn't do that, won that series, and... Yeah, I mean, it's kind of one of those deals where when you schedule Wright State, it's as a coaching staff and as, you know, leaders on the team, you got to, you know, don't just look at the name on the front of the jersey. I mean, that's a group that's won a lot of games. They play in the postseason, you know, every year. They've won games in the postseason, so you got to respect them. And to South Carolina's credit, it looks like they did that.
And South Carolina, one of the reasons that they're good this year, really highly ranked, fifth ranked this week, even with a 5-3 record, but... There are very few teams that have a 1-2 punch at the top of the rotation, Teddy, like they have with Clark Schmidt and Will Crow. And yet, I don't know that they have the best 1-2 punch maybe in the SEC East, as good as those guys are. Because so far, I know last summer, even in Omaha last year after they were eliminated, Kevin O'Sullivan talking about, like, this is going to be difficult to get over. But one reason I know I can get over it is I know that next year I have Fado and... these two freshmen, now sophomores, and Jackson Coar and Brady Singer coming back. And we can see why he was eager to see what this team would look like. Because so far, Florida's rotation, I don't know if the kids still say off the chain. but if they do, then I'm saying that they're off the chain.
It is really incredible. I mean, those are three guys that have the potential to be top 10 picks in the next 2 years. Fado was number one on our college top 100 draft prospects this year. Brady Singer could easily be number one next year, and Jackson Coar is not very far behind. I mean, those guys, they were incredible this weekend against Miami. Florida sweeps the series against the Hurricanes. It's the first time they've swept that series since 2012, and they win it most years. But to be able
pretty
to finish...
every year.
Yeah. Miami.
It's amazing how they kind of own Miami now.
Well, they own the whole state. I mean, they've won the season series against Florida State almost... I don't know how far that one goes back, but they won.
I don't know, Jacksonville would disagree.
Jacksonville did walk off on Florida this week on Tuesday night. They got Florida for a 3-2 victory. But you know, the Gators, I mean, the starting staff, when they've got those guys going, I mean, they're going to be incredibly difficult to beat all weekend. Miami didn't score for the first 21 innings of this series. There are so many incredible stats that you can run out about how dominant Florida's pitching staff this weekend was, especially their starters who threw 22 of the 27 innings. But the one, I guess, when I talked to Sully last night, he made two points. One was that they didn't walk guys. They walked nine guys all weekend.
And Miami usually has really good approaches.
Yes.
I mean, I know that Zach Collins led the country in walks last year, and he's gone. But it's in general. This is a theme of Jim Morris coach teams, just like it is with Florida State. You know, Miami's not to that extent, but that is that's a feature of their program.
Right. They hit for power. They take walks. Like, they have a very mature approach in general at Miami. And Florida threw a bunch of strikes. They only walked nine guys all weekend. And then probably even more importantly, the Hurricanes only got the leadoff batter on in 4 of 27 innings. It's really hard to score runs if you aren't getting walks or the leadoff batter, and Florida only made one error. Like, there's just, Florida's not giving you anything. You had to earn everything, and Miami was unable to break through for most of the series.
And against those three pitchers, it's really hard to string 3 and 4 hits together. If they're not giving you walks and you're not getting any extra outs, it's very hard to string that together. Fajardo in 3 career starts against Miami, 20 innings pitched, 5 hits. This is from your own tweet, Teddy. 20 innings, 5 hits, 2 runs, 1 earned, 7 walks, 27 strikeouts. So 12 base runners allowed, basically, in those 20 innings. The Hurricanes will not be sorry to see him go in any way, shape, or form. And yet, as good as he is, and he's really stinking good, Brady Singer's probably better. Isn't he?
I think the ceiling's higher, potentially.
At his best is better than Alex Fado's best. That's a better way to put it.
Yeah. Singer went out. He followed. Fado almost threw a shutout. He should have thrown a shutout. The one error was with 2 outs in the 9th, and Florida kicked a ball or threw a ball away, and Fado thought he'd done it. But there was an error, and then he walked the next guy, and Sully went and got him because it was a 1-0 game, and they finished off the shutout. But Sinner comes out the next day, strikes out 11. He was a little bit more wild, 3 walks, 5 hits for Miami. But his fastball, Logan Shore tweeted last week during Sinner's start that Brady Sinner's fastball was the best he's ever seen, and it just has so much sink, like it's insane. And so it moves a lot, so he can get swings and misses on it. It's in the mid-90s. It's difficult to hit. And if you do hit it, you're probably not going to square it up. You're probably hitting it into the ground.
If you know any pro ball as well as college baseball, let's just remind you, as you wrote in 2015, Teddy, that the Florida recruiting class that year, high school state of Florida pitching, included Jacob Woodford and Thomas Apucki. Thomas Apucki, I'm blanking on Jacob Woodford. I always get him mixed up with Tristan McKenzie. Who signed Jake Woodford?
The Cardinals.
Cardinals signed Jake Woodford. He's in the handbook. Thomas Apucki's in the Mets top 10. And when he was healthy last year in rookie ball, he shoved for the Mets. He's got devastating stuff. So they probably weren't expecting to get any of those guys. Singer was the highest drafted, highest unsigned high school player in that year's draft class. So they were fortunate to get one of those three. But, Brady Singer so far is... when you're the highest drafted guy who doesn't sign, you have pretty high expectations. Look at the way we talk about Lodolo this year, Nick Lodolo, and he's one of the reasons why TCU was preached as a number one. Mm-hmm. Might be a good transition. But Brady Singer had very high expectations, and he's living up to them so far. And he just made us anticipate him even more last year with his summer in the Cape. I just think it's remarkable, though, that Florida has had this reputation for pitching for so long. But it's really been built with both starters and bullpen. But as you mentioned, this weekend they pitched 22 innings out of the 27. If Florida's going to get back to Omaha again, the starters are going to be the ones pulling the majority of the weight. It's not going to be this devastating bullpen. It's going to be these three guys carrying a disproportionate share compared to past Sully staffs.
Yeah, last year, obviously, Logan Shore was giving you at least 7, it felt like, every Friday night. But then, with A.J. Puck, sometimes it was up and down, and sometimes you needed Dane Dunning to piggyback him. And that was especially the case later in the season. And then they had Sean Anderson, who was a top 100 pick, coming out and closing. And Florida, the bullpen arms are younger. They're going to work them out. I feel pretty confident in
reason to be confident.
Right, Sully figures out his bullpen. He's never not had enough arms. But right now, the difference between the starters and the bullpen is just in terms of where these guys are in terms of draft prospects. Like, the starters are far ahead. Frank Rubio is a really nice senior to have at the back of your bullpen closing. But, he's not going to be like Sean Anderson going in the top 100 picks.
Right.
So, Florida, they probably don't need their bullpen as much this year because their starters are so good. And we saw that this weekend that, if they can go out and pitch 22 of 27 innings on a weekend, then, you don't need your bullpen all that much.
I mentioned earlier, Nick Lodolo. Let's transition a little bit to TCU real quick. Jimmer, just anything stand out to you this weekend from this Arizona State TCU series? 15,000 fans nearly. Yeah, Arizona, Fort Worth. That's pretty good.
Yeah, no, 2 weeks in a row, I think they've had around that number.
They've been pretty good.
They have
college
great
baseball attendance so far around the country. That I've noticed.
It really is around the country. I mean, Minnesota put 4,600 people in the Vikings Stadium this weekend to watch them sweep Seattle. I mean, it is everywhere. And it's been very impressive. I've talked to multiple coaches about this, and they think some of it is the weather. Some of it is just people are excited about college baseball.
It's noteworthy, though. And as TCU start, I mean, I know they lost the game this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they've been to Omaha 3 years in a row, but they've never been preseason number one.
Yeah.
They've been number one, once before, the Matt Perk year, 2010, I think?
This preseason was the first time they'd ever been number one, period.
I mean, so it's a little bit bigger target on their backs.
Yeah.
They seem like they're handling it all right.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that was one of the things Jim Schlossnagel, their coach, talked about in the preseason, was that Matt Perk, coming off the Matt Perk year, he didn't think they handled it very well, the pressure of being, I think they were number three.
That's why that was in my head.
Yeah, there you go. And they didn't. He didn't think they handled that season very well. I guess that would have been the 11 season. So they definitely talked a lot about, you know, how to approach it, how to handle the pressure, how to handle, you know, the expectations, and the fact that everyone's going to be gunning for you. They're 7-1. They swept Penn State. Now they take 2 out of 3 from ASU. And I think on the field, certainly the pitching will be there. Obviously, it wasn't in the game they lost, but, you know, the offense, I think Schlossnagel will talk about it. This could be their best lineup that they've had since he's been there. And so far, it looks like they've lived up to it. I mean, they've been scoring 7-8 runs pretty much every game. I know Luke and Baker's hitting some home runs. They're really deep. They're really athletic. And yeah, I mean, they're a very complete team. And now this week, I mean, this is probably the best. This is as good a test as anybody's going to have with Rice, and then going to the Houston College Classic, as it's formerly known now, the Shriners Hospitals for Children College Classic at Minute Maid, with three ranked teams. But it's kind of become a big. I guess it's kind of an unofficial.
This year,
Big 12
the
SEC
format
challenge,
is, yeah.
Which I also love that you talk about with Minnesota, that they want to make that, they're going to kind of formalize that in the coming years. But I guess the two things that stuck out to me was, A, that Baker's already got 3 home runs. Luke Baker, this transition to being a full-time hitter.
Going well so far.
Not so bad so far. Nick Lodolo was solid, but also kind of a little pressure. You lose Friday. You're pitching Saturday, coming off a loss. He didn't pitch great, give a decent amount of base runners, but made pitches when he had to and pitched well enough to get a victory. That's a nice sign.
Pulled that game out late, too.
Right. And then the other part of that for me is this is just more of kind of what I wrote about last year at the College World Series is, you see, I know Bill Mosiello goes way back with Andy Stankiewicz. They're childhood friends, if I remember this correctly from the past stories. But they worked together in the Yankees organization, Andy and Bill did. Now Mo is the assistant coach at TCU and is in charge of the hitters there. And they are one of the most aggressive offensive approaches. And just if you talk to scouts about college baseball, they stop railing on it, first of all, which is just, you know, I think it's just almost, it's not even based all in fact anymore. Now a lot of it's based on, oh, we were there for 4 hours the other day. Or, you know, they just nitpick everything. So I think part of it's just like part of the job. But the other part of it is they really respect the teams that have really consistent offensive approaches. And TCU really has a consistent offensive approach. A team who, you heard the same thing about Indiana a couple of years ago. I know a lot of it was Kyle Schwarber and Sam Travis. But you heard that consistently about Tracy Smith's clubs at Indiana. Been a little shakier start the first year plus at Arizona State. That's not easy. He was taking over a program that had fallen down a little bit in terms of its recruiting, especially its talent base. And your first year there, Arizona goes to Omaha. I mean, that's tough.
Second year there.
So now the progress this year had been a little slow, but I think it's important for them to have gone to TCU. They played pretty well. Teddy, it's younger pitching. They started the Iowa freshman, whose name I can't pronounce, on Sunday. Spencer Van something.
Skoyuk,
who I know the Blue Jays drafted as well. He and Brady Singer could have compared Blue Jays scouting notes. What did you see out of Arizona State this weekend? What are the positives Tracy Smith and the Sun Devils could take from it? What are the things they need to work on to win one of these series in the future? Because the goal at Arizona State is not just to be competitive, it's to win national championships.
Well, I mean, I think the going to TCU is very difficult to do. So this was the first time this Arizona State team is on the road. You're going to a really tough environment. So to go out on Friday night and to put 13 runs on the board,
that's pretty good.
Yeah, I think that is like number one the thing to take away from is that, you know, if we just go and play our game, like we can, like we just beat the number one team in the country, and we scored 13 runs on them, like we can do this.
Yeah.
And so I think that's important. I think just there are a lot of young players here. Arizona State brought in a top 10 recruiting class in the fall, and a lot of them are playing. Spencer Van Skoyek's playing. They have several players like that playing, and they have, you know, there's some sophomores playing too. Tyler Williams in the outfield stands out as a sophomore who had a pretty good weekend for them. And so, I mean, they're a younger team right now, especially in certain key areas. And they just need to, you know, develop more confidence. And I think that's what this weekend does. You know, they were in position to win on Sunday. TCU was able to come back and win that. But, you know, they competed hard all weekend. And, you know, it would have been pretty simple. Or they were close to pulling this series out.
Right.
And that would have been huge for them, but I think they should still leave Fort Worth feeling pretty good about themselves. You're right. I mean, the expectations at Arizona State are much higher than feeling good about yourself.
Right.
But, you know, they're playing difficult teams here at the outset of the season, and that competition is going to help this young team grow up. And it took them a little while to figure it out last year before they got together and became a regional caliber team. And, you know, if they can work towards that again this year, I think they're going to be in pretty good shape.
You're sitting there going into the number one team in the country on the road, and you're hitting freshman 3-4 and Carter Aldrete and Lyle Lynn. That is, and Hunter Bishop's in the 9-hole. There's some significant pieces of that freshman class, and to turn things around, you know, you're kind of expecting that it's going to be the younger guys who are doing that when you're talking about recruiting had flagged previously. So. I thought it was a pretty important win on Friday for Arizona State, but then pretty important for TCU to kind of hold serve the rest of the weekend. I guess the other team that stood out to me, and again, I wasn't on last week's podcast, but the other team that stood out to me the first 2 weeks, I'm sure you guys talked about them a lot last week when they swept East Carolina's Ole Miss. They're a surprise so far. I mean, again, it's not a huge surprise for an SEC team to beat, even if it's East Carolina was number 6 in the preseason, it's not really a huge upset for Ole Miss to win that, especially when they had the number one recruiting class in the country. But they've played a lot of freshmen so far as well. Teddy, what's the other key for them getting off to the 7-0 start so far?
Well, last week when we talked about it, even on the Facebook Live, Jimmer, I mean, we talked about how it wasn't going to get easier, particularly. Like, yes, no. East Carolina, that was a good series win. It was a great to sweep that. But
you can see Wilmington.
Wilmington, they were in a regional final last year, and I know they feel like they probably should have won that regional. You know, so South Carolina needed to beat them twice, and Wilmington couldn't quite stop that from happening. But you know, Wilmington is driven this year. They believe this is the year for them to break through to super regionals or more with that offense. And Ole Miss did not really have much of a trouble this weekend. They, again, sweep.
23 runs scored. I mean, UNC Wilmington, I think of Wilmington as an offense-first ball club. I guess that was validated a little bit this weekend, that they could not keep Ole Miss off the board. You know, 7-8-8 in those three games. Pretty consistent showing by the Rebels. I know the UNCW plays a good schedule every year. I just got to think going to Swayze, going to that ballpark, even early in the year, just not an easy place to play.
Not at all. I mean, I haven't looked to see what their attendance was this week, but that's another place that set an attendance record last weekend. I mean, Ole Miss is fired up for this team, and they're fired up for these freshmen. They're fired up for a few of them are hometown kids. Mike Bianco has told me that he's never really had hometown kids in Oxford before, but this year's they have some, and so the fans are excited about that. And they
26,000, almost 27,000 fans on hand for the weekend.
That's a little down from last week, but that's still incredible.
I'm telling you, this is not usual. I mean, this is really unusual. I know SEC basketball is bad, you know, so this is part of it. But I mean, that's not the case at TCU. Jamie Dixon, you know, TCU's been competitive. They got jobbed this weekend. I don't know if you saw that at all.
I saw the Twitter uproar about it.
They got jobbed. I don't remember the name of the player who got called for a late foul, but that was a cheap foul late in the game. You can see I'm still transitioning out of basketball mode. I do love college basketball. But, TCU's drum, I'm blown away by some of the attendance numbers. But I am really impressed. I thought that UNC Wilmington's lineup would at least allow them to win one of those games this weekend. So I still believe in the Omahawks, as they like to use they used to call themselves. I don't think they do that anymore.
I think that's
that hashtag has gone by the boards.
Yeah, I think the year they tried to trot that out was the one year they were not so good. So.
I think you're right, but I mean, like,
they kind of ditched it.
But I mean, this scene of the kind of thing, guys, that if you're UNC Wilmington, you should be able to learn from in the future, the rest of the year, if you don't let it really dent your confidence. I mean, that's the key. It seems to me, Jimmer, is that, you know, now maybe you kind of get a taste of what it takes to compete at that level.
Exactly. I mean, it's kind of what like what Teddy was talking about, where they weren't able to finish the deal in a regional last year. So you're kind of hope that, all right, we've been on the road in a really tough place, and we hopefully know what we have to do better to be able to finish these games. And obviously, they will get some more chances. They'll play midweek games with, you know, the
NC State. They play Coastal this week.
There you go. And they'll play NC State and North Carolina, the usual in-state teams they play. So they get some more experience against power conference teams. But yeah, I mean, you got to learn from from an experience like this if you're gonna win a regional, you're gonna have to win on the road,
right?
So it's an important experience for them, and they are, you know, they're, feel like they usually are an older team. The Seahawks, they have like Nick Fate and guys like that, who's guys that were there last year that have been around, and yeah, it's so you would hope that from a weekend like this that they can, you know, take some lessons from it, and hopefully when June rolls around, that maybe they can hold the line a little better.
We also mentioned we were talking about attendance, 16,000 plus at McKeithen Stadium this weekend for Florida. That's a program record for a weekend series.
So that's one place where you don't see the huge crowds typically.
Not usually.
They were sold out on Saturday. I think they're probably sold out on Friday. They were fired up for that series. I mean, it is a huge rivalry, but they were fired up for it.
You heard the Minnesota thing, and this is all in the Teddy's Off the Bat column, comes out every Monday morning. 4,600 fans over the weekend, which is SEC fans would scoff, like, come on, that's like our season ticket base.
I feel like every time you make a reference to attendance, a non-SEC teams are going to get that reaction.
The scoff. But, yeah. This is correct. The scoffing will happen. But I love that you, first of all, US Bank Stadium, so back to having an indoor place for Minnesota. It is amazing that they won the league last year without the indoor home.
They only had 17 home games against Division I teams last year.
That's
and they
crazy.
They won the Big Ten like that.
And there's just zero surprise that 2020 SEC teams want to get up there. SEC teams already recruit the heck out of Minnesota. Logan Shore, A.J. Puckett from Iowa. And that's not the only school. I mean, Arkansas has consistently gone up to Wisconsin, and then they couldn't do it because Vanderbilt went and got Jaren Kendall. So all these SEC schools consistently recruit that area anyway. It's another reason. Here's another reason why they want to play in that tournament. A, Minnesota's going to bring in other good teams. You're guaranteed you're going to play. There is baseball interest. People in Minnesota are dying to watch baseball in February. But, oh, by the way, you can have recruits come see your team up close and personal.
Yeah, I mean, when I was talking with Coach John Anderson last night about that, I mean, he that's a big recruiting tool for him now moving forward, that they have this building that they can play in. And it's a cool thing. They all like the setup from the field. It's just three games in, but they had one minor issue with the mound. They had some dirt in it, and now after the first game, they decided to go with total turf. There's no dirt in that place at all. But everyone was otherwise happy with it. It'll get a bit more of a test this weekend when they have their tournament with Iowa, Hawaii, and Oral Roberts. But
the Dairy Queen Classic.
The Dairy Queen Classic, yes. But you know, in the future, next year, it's a Pac-12 Big Ten challenge. The following year, it's the ACC. And yeah, I mean, there's interest to potentially create a Big Ten SEC challenge up there. And, you know, one thing the coaches are all looking for at the start of the season is just a guarantee, or as much guarantee as you can possibly give, that you will play games. Oregon State coach Pat Casey was talking to Mike Linnana about this a couple weeks ago. That's why they go to Surprise, Arizona, every year, because they can't convince teams that the weather in Corvallis would be okay right. the first couple weeks of the season. So they go to Surprise, where they can basically say that, like, look, it's Arizona, we'll play.
The weather here this weekend was so good that Teddy got in a 22-16 game at Spartan on Spartan Crime. That was ridiculous.
I didn't even think about the Spartan.
I did it until I went to write a tweet and I discovered that I couldn't say Spartans.
Is it like, did they just play the 300 on a loop there?
They did not. I don't know what they do at Michigan State, but I've seen multiple games now at Greensboro. I've never heard the 300 theme.
I have to admit, I have a soft spot for that. Not just because I'm Greek, and it's definitely not because I have good abs like Gerard Butler. It's actually quite the opposite. But I have a soft spot for that movie, and I just hear the word Spartan, and now I hear him saying it. It's really sad. I can't get that out of my head. That movie's been out for like, what? That was like 10, 11 years ago.
Definitely a decade ago, yeah.
I mean, I just remember UC Irvine marching into Wichita State in 2007 and doing like these Spartan chants, so I'm a little past the time. That movie's a little baked, but it's still a little washed, but it still comes up in my head when I hear that Spartans. Who else did you see this weekend, Teddy? I saw a little Penn State Xavier.
Yeah, I was there for the first day of that when Sal Biazzi was taking on Zach Lothar from Xavier. And Lothar's they're both of draft interest. Lothar led the Cape in strikeouts over the summer, so he is a little higher on boards right now as a big lefty that gets swings and misses on strikeouts. It was not his best day. The first inning looked like it might be. He struck out the side, but Penn State was able to make an adjustment, and they beat him for the first win of the season after getting swept over at TCU. But Xavier and Penn State split that series. Xavier, the Big East favorites last year, they won the Big East, went to a regional final. They're looking to keep that going. They're 500 this year after splitting four-game series with Penn State and Troy. It's still a pretty good team, and Penn State trying to keep the progress going under Coach Cooper.
That's another very young roster. When you look up and down that Penn State roster, I know there's some veteran guys like Willie Berger at first base, but I was just surprised. The best swings I saw, and I'm going to blank on the kid's name, he was second baseman. I think his name was Haynes. I think it was Alex Haynes playing second base. He's out of Apex, North Carolina. He looked right at home playing in Cary. Really quality swings all day Sunday. But I just was a little bit surprised at just how youthful that Penn State lineup was. It was freshmen and sophomores, heavy reliance on freshmen and sophomores. But they swung the bat well. That was the coolest day of the weekend, but a lot of warmer weather that was also seen around here. But I tell you, this is a big weekend for college baseball tournaments. I'm spinning ahead. I'm sure there's other things we could review this week as well, but I might leave that to you two guys. Spinning ahead, you've got the LeClaire Classic this weekend at East Carolina. It's a top 15 team that's playing at home this weekend. But the big Shriner Classic, as you alluded to earlier, Jimmer, mm-hmm. What used to be called the Astros College Classic, that field is as loaded as it's ever been. Best field ever. I mean, it seems like they've had some really good fields.
I have to go through and review the 17-year history of this thing, but I can't imagine that it's ever been better than this. I mean, you have the number one team in the country, TCU. You have the number four team in the country, LSU. You have three other ranked teams, Texas Tech, Ole Miss, and Texas A&M. The only team in the field not ranked is Baylor, and Baylor is 9-0, and they just swept South Alabama, which is a very solid program, a team that we think is a regional team.
It was a big win for Baylor, I felt like. I don't know if it's possible to take Baylor out of the current Baylor context in any way, but Baylor
Kim Mulkey is doing her best to make sure that you don't.
Exactly. Baylor, that's what I'm saying, Baylor will take good news right now. So Steve Rodriguez, who kind of walked into this hornet's nest there at Baylor, coming from Pepperdine. I had very good reasons to take that job, I'm sure. I don't have the specifics because it's a private school job. But all that did at Pepperdine was go to his alma mater where he played, won a national championship as a player, and he got him to a super regional as a head coach. And he did a really nice job as a head coach, coached with the college national team as an assistant. And so now he's tasked at Baylor with replacing a guy who was there a long time, and Steve Smith. He was one of the guys.
I believe Steve Smith is the winningest coach in Baylor history. He had a very good run there for a while.
He had a really good run and made Baylor relevant nationally and got him to Omaha one year. So, if not twice. Maybe it was twice. But, made Baylor a relevant baseball program. So, not an easy guy to replace. So, I imagine this weekend's almost as important for Baylor as for anybody else because That school needs positive pub, and right now the baseball program is providing it.
Well, I think this weekend has a chance to be a moving weekend in the country for everyone because so many teams are playing against top competition throughout the country. If you make noise this weekend, like, it's going to be very loud. Whoever comes out of Houston with big wins, I don't know if anyone's going to sweep through there, or if you even come out of Houston with two wins this weekend, no matter who you are, it's going to have been a very successful, important weekend for you. And Baylor obviously has a lot to gain. But they all do. I mean, even TCU has a lot to gain. This is going to be the toughest competition that these teams face
for
a long time. Like, eventually, TCU will get into Big 12 play and they will face Texas Tech on the road. But for now, this is the biggest weekend for the first month plus of the season for so many teams around the country. Definitely for all the teams in Houston. But, I mean, there's another tournament in Frisco that has Arizona, Oklahoma State, Nebraska, and Arkansas. Like, that's loaded. The Dodgertown Classic is UCLA, USC, Michigan, and San Diego. None of those teams are ranked, but that's a huge weekend. Like, that's four really strong programs, four teams that have regional aspirations. And, you know, I mean, so no matter where you are this weekend, it feels like, for the most part, you have a chance to really make a statement. And it's especially true in Houston. And on Friday night, we're going to get TCU against LSU in a top five showdown, which is, I mean, that's a great way to start that tournament off.
When we talk about SEC East, I would be remiss if I didn't mention the 1-2 punch in the SEC West of Jared Poche and Alex Lang. Jared Poche, Jim Morelli, we've been doing this a long time. I don't remember anybody coming out of the chute with back-to-back, you know, threatening Vandermeer.
I know, right?
I mean, when does that happen? Maybe Poche's Cajun for Vandermeer, I don't know. I hadn't thought about that. I
mean, Johnny Vandermeer needed the apostrophe in his name.
That's right. Well, I don't think the Dutch have apostrophe. They just have three names. Well, I think Durr means apostrophe.
There you go.
But I mean, like, it's pretty. You got to be pretty good to put Alex Lang as your wingman. You know, clearly Poche is doing something right.
Yeah, I know. It was kind of funny when I talked to when I did the feature on Lang in the preseason. And one of the things Paul Maneri talked about was when they were moving. So, like, the last 2 years, Poche's been the Friday guy, and they had Lang on Saturdays, and they flipped him this year. I think
flipped it partway through last year.
Okay, but like,
he started opening day 2 years in a row.
Yeah, one of the things, like, that Maneri said was, like, you know, at least, you know, Alex Lang's been so good, he deserves to start opening day at least once in his career here, so we're going to move Poche back to Saturday. And, like, so far, I think Jared Poche's kind of liking what he's doing on Saturdays. That hasn't worked out too bad for him. And,
yeah, I wouldn't mess with that in any way,
no.
Shape, and or form.
But, yeah, I mean, it's just... I mean, you know, Poche's always been kind of that gamer who's, you know, Lang's got the stuff. He'll be the first round pick. Poche's kind of more the good college pitcher. Not that he doesn't have stuff, but he's kind of more in that, you know, different mold. And yeah, I mean, he throws the seven inning no hitter against Army on week one, and now Maryland. I mean, obviously Maryland is struggling. You know, obviously.
I'm sorry, Jim.
Yeah, that's all right. Yeah, I had to talk to him. I had to talk about it last week too. Yeah, Kevin Smith's been out of the gates.
Work your way through it.
Yeah, but I mean, so it's been a tough couple weeks for the Terps. But I mean, what, he carries a no-hitter into the ninth. And I think, was it an infield single that broke it up?
It was an infield single to lead off the inning.
So there you go. So yeah, I mean, that's, but it wasn't a bunt, though.
It was not a bunt.
No bunts.
All right, I think we would have heard about it if it was a bunt. But yeah, so I mean, so what, 15 shutouts or
15
no hit innings to start a season.
That's not easily done.
No, doesn't matter. Don't care who you're pitching against.
Definitely.
I mean, it really is very impressive. And, you know, that's a guy that was drafted in the 14th round last year by the Padres, decides to come back, and right now, I mean, he has to be loving that. I mean, to be able to do that in the box, like, they're going to love him down there for a long time. You know, even if he'd gone out, but his senior farewell tour is off to a fantastic start.
It is. The other thing I wanted to ask you guys about before I left was Baylor, longest win streak to open a season since 1984. St. John's longest since 1981. But what makes that cool was that was Frank Viola and John Franco on the team.
That is
incredible.
It is absolutely incredible. And the Johnnies, 8-0.
Johnnies, sorry. Have to go raft on that one.
Well, they'll be playing UNC on Wednesday, which, I mean, like, that feels like a basketball showdown. I mean, it's become a traditional game for them, for Ed Blankmeyer likes to... When he's down in North Carolina for these early season tournaments.
Come here the last few years, it feels like.
I saw Joe Panic here six years ago.
Your intern year was the Joe Panic versus Levi Michael game.
It was a lot
of heat on that game. It was extremely cold outside. There was a ton of scouts at that game to measure up two of the better college shortstops. And obviously, Panic has been the better pro by leaps and bounds. I mean, Levi Michael had that groin injury that year and really never came back from that.
No, but Joe Panic has been incredible.
Yeah, he's been an incredible pro.
And this St. John's team, they can hit. It's an older lineup. They've really got a lot of experience in that lineup, and they're leveraging it right now. And they're they haven't played a series yet. They've played two tournaments, but they've swept through those two tournaments. That includes a win at Coastal. I mean, they're really rolling right now, and. If they can, they have a lot younger pitching, and if that younger pitching can hold up throughout the course of the season, they're going to make a lot of noise in the Big East. You know, I mentioned Xavier, kind of is the preseason favorite and won it last year, but St. John's is definitely going to give them a run for their money.
They're hitting .363 as a team. That's ridiculous. So I'll leave you with that. But thanks for having me on the podcast, guys. I have another more podcasting to do. So keep up the good work.
Well, Jimmer, one other series I wanted to touch on was Illinois-Chicago going out and beating Vanderbilt. We mentioned Wright State at the start of this, but the Horizon League now has two top 10 series wins 2 weeks into the season. I shouldn't say this without looking this up, but I doubt the Horizon League has done that in, I don't know, potentially ever, certainly in the last few years.
Yeah, I can't imagine that's a very common occurrence for the no disrespect to the Horizon League, but I can't imagine.
Yeah, Wright State, very good program. Illinois, Chicago, been very consistent. Yeah. Those two used to be a little, they still are like the two programs in that league. Wisconsin, Milwaukee has done a good job too. But Illinois, Chicago goes to Vanderbilt this weekend.
Two extra inning wins.
This is the fifth time in I think it's 7 years they've played this series. Entering this weekend, Vanderbilt was 12-0 in those games. and then on Friday night, USC goes out and they win in extra innings. They beat Kyle Wright, your preseason All-American. And it's on that Friday game, the game starts with Jaron Kendall hitting a leadoff home run. Mm-hmm. And UIC easily could have, just said like, oh, okay, so this is how it's going to be, and, become overwhelmed. But UIC, to their credit, they took that punch and they just absorbed it. Mm-hmm. And their starter, Jake Dahlberg, he's very experienced, good, solid left-hander. He goes out and, he keeps them in the game, and they're able to come back and knock off the Commodores in game one.
And it was Sunday was kind of the same type of start. Like, Vandy scored twice in the first.
Yeah. And that's after.
And that's it.
Yeah, and so Vanderbilt wins on Saturday, scores twice in the first inning on Sunday. Easily, again, that's another opportunity for a lesser team to fold, to say, okay,
we had our little moment
we gave it a run, and Vanderbilt now is going to take this over. But UIC again gets a solid start, and they chip away at the lead, and then they drop three runs in the 11th.
Any concern on the part of the Vandy boys for you, or
it's not a good look, and I'm not quite sure what happened here. When Clemson lost last weekend, I feel like I had a better understanding for what happened to Clemson.
I feel like we kind of had a better handle on what Clemson's potential
weaknesses were,
could be.
And Wright State exploited them. Vanderbilt's weaknesses, they definitely exist. They're maybe not as glaring as Clemson's, given what happened to Clemson a year ago in terms of their pitching. But Vanderbilt, I did have a little bit of a concern coming into the year that they're a little... There is talent on that team. There is so much talent on that team. But Jaron Kendall and Kyle Wright are I mean, they kind of are like these two cornerstones. They have to carry a lot of the load. They really need Kendall to be the offensive focal point, and they need Kyle Wright to be really good on Friday nights. And the rotation after that, Patrick Raby, who won on Saturday, he's been very good, very consistent. But there wasn't a clear Sunday starter coming into the year. There wasn't a clear closer coming into the year at Vanderbilt. So Vanderbilt's still working some things out. They're still pretty young. They're playing a lot of sophomores this year from that number one ranked recruiting class a year ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think they will work it out because, there is just so much talent there.
That staff knows what it's doing.
Right. But I think there is some of this early season just like who fits best where. I feel like some of that's going on right now. And again, this is a team that they had handled so well in recent history mm-hmm. that I think there is a little bit of a concern. But I think it's also, you know, you're definitely not hitting the panic button if you're a Vanderbilt fan. But I think there is, I mean, this has to be a wake-up call for the Commodores that, you know, you have to come out and play your best. The teams aren't going to roll over for you. And they're going to face more tough competition exactly. this week. I mean, you got Southeastern Louisiana.
Very good.
Yeah, that's a consistent regional contender, at least.
Next week they play St. Mary's, who was a regional team last year.
Yeah, and that's not to overlook Northridge this year, who, you know, when you talk to Big West coaches, you know, a lot of them feel like Northridge can take a step forward this year. And, I mean, there's going to be some real competition there again this weekend.
And Vandy opens conference play at Ole Miss.
Yeah,
so
and then Ole Miss, 2 weeks to be ready, Ole Miss followed by Texas A&M. Like, yeah. So, you know,
obviously in the SEC there are no real breaks, but, you know, you can't open against Georgia and Missouri.
Yeah.
Might have been preferable.
I mean, to have to go on the road to open the season and then to see A&M coming in the next week, and, I mean, you've got to be ready to go for that. And they still have a couple weeks here to get ready. You know, they beat a really good San Diego team, a mm-hmm. really solid San Diego team that then went out this weekend and won the Tony Gwynn Classic. They went out to San Diego and won a series there. So, you know, coming off of that, you know, I felt better about Vanderbilt. But now they've lost back-to-back starts from Kyle Wright to start the season. And again, yeah. That is not the way you want to be living if you're Vanderbilt. You want to be winning. I mean, everyone wants to win on Friday night, but the way Vanderbilt's set up, I mean, they have this first-team All-American throwing on Friday nights. You want to be winning with that guy. And then,
yeah, when you don't win with your best guy, whether he's throwing Friday or some teams use their aces on Saturday or what have you, it's making your life tougher.
Right. So Vanderbilt doesn't have a whole lot of time to feel sorry for themselves here because that Southeastern team, if they aren't ready for them with these two midweek games, this could potentially carry over. But, you know, again, that staff is not going to allow them to do that. So I think they'll be ready to go in the midweek and they'll get some things straightened out here. Like I mentioned earlier, not a whole lot of movement in the poll. Vanderbilt's drop was
to 14.
Yeah, falling from 9 to 14. I think they actually might have been the biggest movers in the poll. I guess Oklahoma State dropped from 20 to 24.
They kind of had that holdover
right,
Grand Canyon series.
When the last poll came out, the Grand Canyon series was not over because they got delayed a day due to the bad weather out west. So yeah, those are the two teams that dropped. East Carolina and North Carolina State enter the top 10. I mean there was not a whole lot of poll movement. I think we appreciated that.
Probably will change this week with a lot of all these ranked teams playing each other.
I mean, when you consider that a fifth of this top 25 is going to be at Minute Maid,
insane.
Teams have to lose. So
someone's got to lose.
If you don't like the rankings this week, check back in a week. We're going to know a lot more about a lot of teams, mm-hmm. and there is, I promise you, movement. I promise you a lot of movement in next week's edition of the rankings. I'm already not really looking forward to that.
Yeah, it was nice when our rankings call took about 20 minutes last night, which is probably a record.
I would imagine, and that 20 minutes includes I think we only spent about 10 minutes actually ranking. Everything was so simple that you know, we were able to accomplish this much quicker than we usually are. I do not think that is going to be the case in a week's time. Well, Jimmer, I think that covers the weekend pretty well. We're looking forward to another very exciting week. We've talked about all these tournaments that are coming up here.
Long Beach at Carolina series is kind of the locally is probably the biggest thing. We know we'll have some people at that one.
Absolutely. You know, Long Beach and Carolina were both preseason top 25 teams. Beach has dropped out, but they rebounded over the weekend, sweeping Fordham. They got another really tough test having to come to North Carolina, who is undefeated. You know, so they're and UNC has a really tough week with St. John's and then Long Beach. UNC's not going anywhere, but that's another team that I think we're going to know a lot more about this time next week. And then obviously
South Carolina,
I mean the biggest rivalry of the weekend is Clemson South Carolina. That's always a fun series. You know, huge crowds all over the Palmetto State.
Wherever they go, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
That format is just so much fun at each site and with the game. And I assume it's in Greenville again.
It is in Greenville. They start this year. Wait, I thought I had it pulled up. They start this year in Clemson, and then they conclude in Columbia with Greenville in the middle. The last 2 years, Clemson has won this series. So South Carolina definitely looking to snap that skid and take advantage of the fact that the series closes in Columbia. Last year they won the game in Columbia and they weren't able to win the next two, so they're going to have to find a way to win.
Find a way to win with Mike Linnana present is the real,
absolutely.
The real challenge for them.
But yeah, we mentioned their rotation at the start of this: Clark Schmidt, Will Crow, Adam Hill. I mean, they're going to be tough to beat, but Clemson has the offense, obviously, as we know with Seth Beer and company. They're going to score some runs, so It'll be a fun weekend. Somebody's strength has to win, and I think that adds even.
And you wonder if, like, you're just kind of looking back at Clemson's week, winning that 1-0 game on Friday. You wonder what, I mean, you feel like that kind of would give them some kind of a confidence builder for them, and also their midweek game. They were down like 5-1 to Western Carolina, and came back to win. So maybe they've kind of broken out of that little whatever little malaise they might have had on opening weekend.
I mean, they better have, because if they haven't, South Carolina is going to explode.
Yeah, for sure.
So,
and then they jump into ACC play, which opens week four.
Right.
So,
and I mean, it's all coming at us pretty fast here.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no slowdown in the schedule, and that's what makes college baseball fun. Is that if you don't like what happened today, well, tomorrow gives you another opportunity. If you don't like this weekend, well, next weekend is it's another really tough opponent coming in, or just another opportunity to go out and play. And Clemson took advantage of that, going out sweeping Elon after that Wright State series, and they're going to have the opportunity to really capitalize this weekend, a potential marquee early season series win. And last year, I think that really, really helped them in terms of national seeds, hosting,
sure,
and everything. They wind up sneaking that last national seed a year ago, and I would have to imagine that a part of the reason was that they had this really nice series win against South Carolina.
Absolutely, that was a big deal for them, because they were not, I think they finished, fifth in the ACC or something like that, fifth or sixth. And yeah, so that, I mean, so they finished hot and they won the ACC tournament was probably those were huge pieces of it too. But yeah, having that non-conference series win was a huge thing on their resume.
It's kind of crazy to think about RPI and
oh, it's never far from my mind. You
right.
Know that.
Absolutely not. But these all matter.
Yeah,
like,
every game
counts.
That's
the thing.
We've been talking about these Clemson and Vandy losing these series. Is that, I mean, you figure, you know, Wright State's RPI will, you know, it's not like they're going to be in the 200s, but that's
they
not
were top
be,
100 last
yeah,
year.
Yeah, so they could be UIC, I guess. If they turn out to win the Horizon, maybe they could be. But
I didn't mention this, but UIC lost to Prairie View A&M on opening day.
Well, that's
they went 2-2 in the MLB Urban Youth Invitational. They lost their first two games, and
so they probably will not be.
So that's gonna
hurt Vanderbilt. I mean,
yeah.
that stays on your permanent record there. So, and then kind of one of these. I mean, it's kind of like Lafayette getting a good non-conference series win at Sam Houston. That's another one of the, you know, probably the one of, if not the best team in the Southland.
And it's on the road, too.
On the road, too. After they had a slow start. I think we talked about West Virginia winning a game at Coastal, and they'll play again today, I believe.
That game is underway, yes.
Yeah, there you go. So, yeah, I mean, this... And just kind of talking about that tournament with Arizona that they're in, with Oklahoma State. So, yeah, all these... I mean, all these... Especially, the, you know, when you get some neutral or road games, that can be a big... That's a big help for you.
Absolutely. It's always interesting talking to coaches about their scheduling philosophies and how much some of them are thinking about RPI all the time and how they're trying to game, you know, getting the best RPI they can. And, you know, that's, I mean, when you see teams playing difficult schedules, not only is that fun for fans, but that's also very beneficial for the teams. Sure. When you see Fullerton opening against Stanford this weekend, they travel to Houston after winning a series at UNLV, and they play two midweeks at Arizona State. Like, all of that is going to be very helpful to Fullerton as they, you know, have their eye on hosting or national seeds or all that sort of thing. So
especially a team in from a non-power conference, you got to
well. I mean, last year,
obviously,
every West Coast RPI was strangely low, and you know, so if that's going to happen again, and I don't think it will. I don't think you think it will either.
I don't think a sub-500 team is going to win the Pac-12.
Right. So, you know, in a more normal year, Fullerton plays this schedule like they do. They get a really nice RPI out of it and go on and host. And frankly, the fact that they played as difficult a schedule as they did last year potentially helped them. They didn't need an at-large bid, but it might have been very...
Yeah, no, I think it still would have been beneficial.
Yeah. I mean, they were certainly in at-large territory, and... So, I mean, and absolutely just playing this difficult competition helps you as you go on. So that's the
bottom line. A, every game counts. And, yeah, playing road and neutral games against good teams, it'll look good for you, you know, a couple months from now.
That's what this weekend is going to be all about. Coaches love these tournaments, especially in Houston. You hear about it all the time from them that this feels like a regional. So that's what this weekend is for a lot of teams. It's a preview. It's a tune-up for regionals.
That's the other thing I've heard. One of the coaches I talked to, I think last year, said that one of the reasons you like to do tournaments like this is just playing a different good team every day is a way to simulating a regional in that way too.
Absolutely. So it'll be an exciting weekend. We're going to have plenty of coverage of it over at baseballamerica.com, and then we will be back here next Monday to talk about it and react to it, to what should be a very entertaining weekend in college baseball. There should also be, you can also catch us on Thursday over on Facebook Live. Somebody will be here. I don't know if it will be me due to travel schedules, but somebody will be talking, previewing the weekend, probably Mike Lanana. And again, all of our content over at baseballamerica.com. And thank you all for listening. Thanks to John. Thanks to Jim for joining me. I've been Teddy Cahill, and we'll be back here next week.
This concludes our program. Want more in-depth baseball coverage? Be a better fan. Visit baseballamerica.com to get more comprehensive baseball coverage.